Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Take a look at the building in which you work or where you live. What spaces have meaning in your town and in your life? Today, we talk about architecture with two award-winning professionals. Tom Hurlburt is a principal at Co-op Architecture with offices in Aberdeen, Sioux Falls, and Rapid City. Co-op Architecture recently captured the most coveted professional prize in the state, an honor award for architecture, and the People's Choice Award for the design of the K.O. Lee Public Library in Aberdeen. Tom, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Andrew Eatrum. He is Vice President and Principal Architect of Architecture Incorporated. They have offices in Rapid City and Sioux Falls. Eatrum was recently named the first recipient of the American Institute of Architects South Dakota Young Architect Award. Welcome.
Happy to be here.
Let's get started with how you got in this business in the first place. Tom, I'm curious, how did you end up as an architect? You have many talents. You could go in many different directions.
Oh, that's generous of you to say. No, I grew up in a construction family, and had some exposure to the world of construction and architecture as a kid. So I certainly think that was some of the beginning sort of steps for me. And then I actually went to school in Bozeman, Montana, as a civil engineer for a semester, and decided that wasn't for me, but went over to the architecture school and saw the interesting things that they were creating over there, and that really, it was a no-brainer for me. I was excited to
like
get
what?
Back over there.
Take me to the moment where you walked in and said that.
Well, I would also argue that there was a book that I read that also played an influence, and it's famous among architecture circles, but The Fountainhead, which is, of course, about an architect, and it's a little bit of an egocentric sort of tale, but nonetheless, it was certainly inspiring at that age.
You mean Ayn Rand?
I'm not a fascist, but it's a great book. It's an enjoyable read, and certainly inspiring to a young guy dreaming about architecture.
Yeah.
But the School of Architecture is just a really creative and enjoyable place, and they're really stretching ideas over there, And so for me, that was just, I saw what some of the students were doing, the models they were building, and that hooked me.
Yeah. Andrew, let's talk about how you got started in this field. What drew you to it?
Similar to Tom, I had some exposure to construction and did some construction work in high school. But I had the opportunity, went to high school in Pipestone, Minnesota, and they were building a new school while I was in high school, and so had some connections to be able to get hooked up and do some job shadowing with the architect when they were on site doing site meetings and meeting with the owner and contractors. And so that kind of sparked the interest. And then toured school up at North Dakota State and decided that was what I wanted to do.
Yeah. What did you love about it in college that made you want to not? So many kids go to college and then halfway through think, this isn't quite what I thought it was, and end up somewhere else. Why did you stay in the same path?
I think it was a good mix of creative, but also, you know, technical problem solving. And so I always like that aspect of what I do is there's days where you're creative and you're creative problem solving, and there's days where you're technically solving problems and working as part of a team to create things.
Let's talk about this award-winning design for the library in Aberdeen. I've seen a photo of this. It's stunning from the outside. I have not been inside. Tom, tell me about some of the challenges of that project and some of those ways that you stretched creatively to create solutions.
Well, First of all, of course, there was a lot of people involved in making that project a success, including all the folks at the city and all the consultants and all the other design people that were involved in it. But with that project, some of the early challenges were, you know, it had been many years, maybe decades, in the works of trying to start that ball rolling, coming up with gathering the support as a community for a new library, and then it did need to go to a bond vote, and that was entirely appropriate that the folks of the community decided to vote and decide if they were willing to allocate funds for that library. But going through that process was a challenge because you're trying to respond to, you know, sometimes there's accurate information and less accurate mm-hmm. information about what this library means, what it'll do, what it'll cost. And so that was, you know, that those provide challenges, but really they're opportunities, and that's the way the process is supposed to work. As from a design standpoint and working with the community and the leaders, it really was a relatively smooth project. I think it was located in central Aberdeen very wisely. It works really well for any community to put some of those sort of civic buildings in the center of a community. So from a planning aspect, it was a success. And then from a design standpoint, we just found a lot of influences from the community and tried to integrate it and make it an important, special place. And we also wanted to do the things that I think, you know, some architecture buildings can be successful when they have done some of the things like, you know, natural light and ventilation and the type of spaces that you feel comfortable in for learning or for gathering. So we try to take those things into account.
What makes let's dig deeper into what makes a successful, you know, structure, a successful design. Natural light, which hasn't always been top of mind. You look at some older buildings, they don't have that. How much does it change over the years? Just our philosophy about what makes a good, you know, what makes good architecture. It's changed how? That's a big question. That's the history of architecture right now. Andrew, go ahead. He's thinking.
You know, talking natural light is a good subject. You look at some of the historical buildings, and they really had large openings because they were relying a lot on natural light to light the space.
Sure.
You know, then there was a period of time where we're energy efficiency. You've got to get rid of these big windows. You're infilling windows And now it's kind of the opposite. Now there have been advances in technology to create better insulated windows and things that give us the opportunity to do much better things as far as natural light without sacrificing energy efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
It's just important to have those windows where you're doing it and those openings well thought through, well placed, appropriately sized. And then you've also... daylight can be a detriment if there's too much where there's glare and other issues. You got to find the balance to control daylight and have it fit the space, fit the use.
Tom, what else has changed? What are some other fundamentals that have really evolved that even from the time when you started?
Well, there's been a lot of changes in the profession. It's been probably maybe this is always the case, but it's always changing faster, it seems like, every year, particularly with technology. But I think that when we talk about things like design and natural light, I think that we're in a very pragmatic part of the world, and so we need to be very thoughtful and conscientious about what we do with design and how we sort of spend our money and do it very thoughtfully and be efficient with it. And that's just a reality. But I think we can do that. And I think that's hopefully what our job is to do that in a very thoughtful way.
What do you like about that challenge and where does it hold you back?
I think there's a lot of room in South Dakota right now. I think that it's an exciting time because there's room to develop kind of a vernacular of architecture here. You know, we come from an agricultural state, but it's not overly defined. There's not a lot of, you know, nobody's really put a giant footprint on this from an architectural standpoint. And I think we get to define that. I think everybody in this state gets to be a part of that process of defining, you know, what do we want our built environment to look like? What are the aspects that are important? So I think it's exciting.
Are we lacking? Are we boring, architecturally speaking, the state of South Dakota?
Maybe not boring.
You wouldn't say it if we were.
Have you
heard that, though? Have you heard people, you know, colleagues from other states or someone, have you heard? Do you have to defend South Dakota, or do you have lots to point to say this is, you know, this is the good things that we have to offer the rest of the nation?
Part of good, successful architecture is working with your context. And so obviously the culture and the people of South Dakota are a major part of what we do as architects and working with those people. And like Tom said, they're sort of pragmatic and reasonable. And so as stewards of those dollars, a lot of times doing public projects, we've got to weigh those opportunities and costs of bigger architectural statements, more contemporary design, and how does that fit the context of the user, of the site? Lots of elements to take into consideration, I think. Hmm. But I don't think boring is the...
No, and I think within that, that doesn't mean that you're not interested in beauty and you're not interested in kind of elevating the design. I think that that's something we're very interested in, and I think that we strive for that on our projects. So.
Yeah. You've worked in New York, came back here. Why stay here?
Well, one of the things that I mentioned earlier is I really think there's a great opportunity, and that's both professionally from a business standpoint and from an architectural standpoint, from a design standpoint. I think there's opportunities here that you might not be able to get so easily in some other communities. And I like it here. that's a reality. I like South Dakota.
Will you stay here long term, Andrew? Do you think this is a place you can build a career?
Sure. I'm totally committed to Sioux Falls and South Dakota, and definitely.
So you work mostly out of Sioux Falls, but you have offices in Rapid City as
Correct.
Well. Do you work with your colleagues across the state? And I'm wondering, is it different? Is architecture different when you cross the river?
First point of working with them, you know, technology is unbelievable, and yeah, we can work on a team with somebody in Rapid City, and it's like they're sitting in the space right next to you. So the technology allows us to do work anywhere, work with team members anywhere. We've done a number of projects with bigger national firms as consultants, architectural consultants, and that process is really aided by the technology we have to very easily work together.
You know, East River, West River?
Yeah, I don't think there's a large difference necessarily, but I do think that it's not necessarily East River or West River. It's about relationships, and it's about listening to your clients. Some places there might be some variables, but for the most part, it's really about just understanding your client. And I think that when you go to these different communities, they want to know a little bit about you. I think that people want to know that they can trust you, and you know, they're putting you in, usually giving you the responsibility of dealing with a lot of money and making sure you don't, you know, spend it unwisely.
And that's permanent.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
What you do is permanent. So, I mean, not, you know.
No, it might only be a 50 or 100 year mistake.
Right.
It's, yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll talk more architecture on the other side of that break. Stay in the moment. SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're talking architecture here on In the Moment today, and with me in the studios at the University of Sioux Falls, we have Tom Hurlburt. He is principal at Co-op Architecture. You might also recognize his voice, so we ought to say Rock Garden Tour. It's not your imagination. Same Tom. And then also Andrew Etram. He's vice president and principal architect of Architecture Incorporated, and you recently were named AIA. South Dakota Young Architect. So let's talk about getting into the profession. And so much has been said lately by Governor Dugard and others about workforce development. So where do those great architects come from? What are you looking for? How do you keep those best students in South Dakota?
Well, I think the first step is we've got a school of architecture in the state now, up at South Dakota State University. That's a big plus for us. I think we were the only state or one of a few states that didn't have an architecture program until recently. And so there, you know, we're starting to see those graduates in the workforce now. And so that's a big benefit to the state versus having to recruit basically all architectural professionals from out of state.
Right. And that's relatively new. So when you studied, that wasn't an option for you.
Yeah, that's right. I agree that, you know, in terms of workforce development, I think our profession probably has some of the same challenges that all of the others do, and that is it hasn't been historically that easy to find good qualified folks to help us, but I think it's improving, again, with the School of Architecture. I'm very excited about that because they're also helping elevate and educate all of us on the value of architecture as well. And that's just going to kind of keep infiltrating our state. And I think I'm excited about what that means for, architecture throughout the state as well. So,
what does that look like when the community values architecture? How do you know? You go into one community or a different community, and you just know these people get it, or these people need, you know, to have some deeper conversations that will help them understand what we're really talking about. What are some of those signs, Tom?
Well, I think that for some folks, it's a little bit arbitrary, but for me, it's pretty evident, and a lot of it has to do with, for instance, vibrancy in your core areas or places where you can be inspired. Whether that's not just, you know, inside a building, that's your exterior kind of perception, your how you enter a community and how you leave a community. And but for me, kind of the A number one, it's usually most evident when you start in the core of a community. You can kind of see what they value and if they value this this community.
Give me an example. Pick a community and tell me something that I walk by and I say, yeah, this is valued here. I'm inspired here.
Well, I think we've made great strides in the Sioux Falls downtown, and I think actually a lot of our downtowns in South Dakota fairly recently have done that. You know, you've seen that in Rapid City as well, with that investment in their downtown and their Main Street Square project, and you see that in other communities, Brookings and Aberdeen and Spearfish have also, and even in, I know in Pierre they've done some things too, and a lot of these communities are recognizing the value of creating a sense of place, a place where you can create memories, a place where mm-hmm. you can. You know, it's not just a box where you come in and buy something, but it's an experience. And I think that people want to have some amenities and some cultural experiences. And so I think that you're seeing those in a lot, kind of throughout South Dakota. And there's a lot of small communities that are doing this as well, that they're making improvements on their main streets and facades and planting trees. You know, they're doing the thing, they're adding beauty. And yeah.
So as a resident of, I live on the east side of Sioux Falls, and that's where the school for the deaf is. Mm-hmm. And that, we don't have to talk about the particular property or what's happening there. But trees are coming down. Something's going up. We don't know what it is yet. And, of course, you've got these beautiful old buildings that are there now. And I'm just crossing my fingers every day that it's not messed up, because that's how important that neighborhood is to me, just to drive by. I really just don't want another strip mall, mm-hmm. or something there. How do you take old buildings like that, and you had, when you've got something that has problems, I'm sure, and sort of retrofit? Do you start from scratch? Do you build off of them, gut them? What are the challenges of some places throughout the state where you're faced with an older structure that really needs to be addressed?
I've got the great fortune of working in a beautiful building downtown Sioux Falls. Our firm's been there for 16 or 17 years. We just renovated the studio space, and so renovations are a fun project, because you're starting with something, and I think it takes more creativity to figure out how do we repurpose this, how do we use this in a different way. When do you respect the history of the building, and when do you put new elements in? So, renovations are a fun challenge.
Hmm. What do you think, Tom? I think your organization also won or was recognized for a building. Help me out. Where was it that you had to?
We won a merit award for the Minneapolis and St. Paul Depot in Aberdeen as well, which we have an office in up there, and that was a kind of a labor of love project of a dilapidated depot, and. Same story. I think it's, and for us, you know, buildings are kind of like, you know, some people have a passion about cars or something like that. You know, mm-hmm. We get excited about buildings. And so I think that typically an architect's, and I might be making a broad assumption here, but, you know, their first idea is, what can we do with that? What value is there still in this building? Because certainly there's some value. And then trying to weigh that, of course, with all of the realities of you know, what costs are associated with building versus tearing down, doing something different.
Yeah. How important is sustainability now? How much is that, you know, we mentioned more energy efficient windows so you can have more light, LEED buildings. How important is the notion of being environmentally friendly in architecture right now? Is it increasing?
Yeah, I think among architects, it's always been important. There's a lot of things we can do, really simple things, fundamental things building orientation, building size, the window openings, and using passive strategies for heating and cooling. There's a lot of easy, common sense things that architects have been focusing on doing for a long time. I think the shift in the last 8 to 10 years is the buzzword of sustainability has become more aware of in the public's eye, and mm-hmm. so that's great because it raises that conversation among more people, more than just architects, and have that conversation with the general public about what's the importance of energy efficiency, what are the importance of putting healthy, clean products into buildings. Anytime you can have that drive that conversation, it becomes more people are becoming aware of the issues. That's certainly important.
Any thoughts? Do you want to add to that, Tom?
Yeah, I agree with Andrew. I think that he's exactly right. I think that we've been concerned about these issues and will continue to be. I think it's inevitable. That's my opinion. I know that not everybody is sold on some of these sustainability kind of buzzwords, but I think that it's inevitable that we're going to continue to design hopefully more and more sustainable and energy efficient types of buildings.
What are the challenges for your profession going forward in South Dakota? When you all get together at an annual conference, you know, what are the conversations you return to again and again and say, you know, that's a problem we have to solve. That's something we need an innovative solution for.
You know, a lot of times what we talk about, you know, Tom and I are both on the board for the state organization. Mm-hmm. A lot of the discussion we're having is how do you continue to make the general public aware of what we do as architects and the value of what we provide as architects. And when the clients you work with understand that, they see the value when they're working with you. Hopefully they see the value when they're working with you. But the people that aren't working with architects or haven't had the opportunity to work with an architect may not understand the value that we can bring to the table.
Mm. Yeah. Same. That's right. Being at the table, I think, is the greatest challenge because I think we can offer a lot. Yeah. I think we can do a lot. I think we can make life better and work better and education better. I think we can offer these things. So getting at the table.
Right. Let's go back to workforce development because there's one question that I didn't really get to ask, and that is who are the future architects? The kids in high school now, who are you looking for? Is the kids from the math and science department, the kids hanging out in the arts wing? Who are the future architects of the state?
Our profession's interesting because you do need that, like I talked about earlier, you need that combination of creativity and design skill and ability, but you also need to solve technical problems. The more and more complex buildings become and the technologies become, you've got to handle those technologies correctly and appropriately and solve those technical issues when we're putting buildings together. Mm. So I wouldn't say it's one or the other. You've got to find those people that have both skills.
What are you looking for next, pushing design forward in the state? What do you think is going to happen next that you're excited about?
I think Tom alluded to this a little bit earlier, is with the School of Architecture right. in the state and seeing those graduates, really, really what the School of Architecture needs to do is they're pushing the limits of technology and it will be interesting to see how the skills and the abilities and the software that they're using, the different tools that they're using and learning in school, how that can actually translate to the profession.
Right. You have to think about everything that's possible, but then bring it down to everything that's possible. that can actually be done right now. So imagination tied to what can we actually accomplish and under a budget.
That's right, and I'm guessing Andrew would feel the same way about this. So as usually when we meet with a client, we definitely want to listen and make sure we're responding to them. But one of the great enjoyable things about our job is we get to dream, and I think we try to push. We want to make sure that we're throwing out creative solutions and not just trying to answer the quickest, easiest solution, because there's multiple ways to solve a building problem, and we want to try to find the best way.
Any last thoughts before I let you go about what folks don't understand about architecture and architects that you want to make sure to leave them with?
you know, architecture is all around us. You know, you're impacted positively or negatively every single day by what architects are doing. Yeah. And you know, we don't take that role or responsibility lightly. Tom mentioned earlier, it's a 50-year mistake or a 100-year mistake. We have a great impact on what people do and what people experience on a daily basis.
Final thoughts, Tom?
Yeah, well said, Andrew. I think that's right. I think that's good enough. Yep.
We'll leave it there. Andrew Eatrim is with Architecture Incorporated. Tom Hurlburt is with Co-op Architecture. Thank you both for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.